now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
You're listening to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, the theme is pressure on managers. Pressure full on, pressure released as well. We'll be talking about Steven Gerrard's exit at Aston Villa. Who next for them and what next for him? Brendan Rodgers relieves more pressure after another win for Leicester, their first away win of the season. Jesse Marsh was booed by his home fans. We'll review their defeat to Fulham. We'll also be talking about Nottingham Forest and Steve Cooper after they stunned Liverpool. Frank Lampard with another good 3 points, beating Patrick Vieira as Crystal Palace, and we'll talk about the game between Spurs and Newcastle as well. This is The Game. Hello and welcome back to The Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Wizencroft. It's Monday. I'm alongside Alison Rudd, Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson. So naturally, it's going to be a good one. Although it hasn't been a great week for Steven Gerrard. We're going to start with Aston Villa, of course. He was sacked since we last spoke after their 3-0 Premier League defeat at Fulham last Thursday. In a statement, the Villa chief executive Christian Perslow said objectives had not been achieved under Gerrard. The former England and Liverpool captain led Villa to only 13 wins from 40 games during his 11 months in charge. Before we talk about Villa's game this weekend, Tony, the right decision to move on from Gerrard for you?
Well, I said the weekend before I'd like to feel that he'd get a bit more time, which is always a big ask in the Premier League if you're at the wrong end of the table and you're losing games and then you have a defeat that has an own goal in it, a sending off, you lose 3-0 at Fulham. The owner's there, and apparently, from what I'm told, the owner hasn't had too much to do with the coaching staff and Steven Gerrard over his period at the club. It was inevitable that the change was going to happen. I feel sorry for him because he was an idol that I loved watching when he was playing for Liverpool. He didn't quite manage like the player, you know, you expected. I saw interviews where I was a bit strange thing to say. I didn't like the way he handled Tyrone Mings when he took the captaincy away. I thought that was a mistake, as in, if you take a captaincy away from a player, it's maybe a good idea to move him out of the club. Now, some people might say that's a bit harsh, but a captain's a very important player. That we always undermine the captains in football, and cricket is far more important, and in rugby it is. I think it's very important in football that if you drop... Look, Connor Cody going to Everton. The Wolves manager, whether you agree with it or not, didn't want him Bruno Lage. He decides to loan him out to Everton because he didn't want him in the club. And I think Steven should have done a similar thing with Tyrone Mings.
Alison, did you cry tears into your Steven Gerrard 8 Liverpool shirt after hearing the news?
No, because it's been a slow, slow death. And when things happen incrementally, you don't get that emotional about them. Right from the start, there were doubts about him at Villa. The people who watch Villa all the time would say, you know, just a few weeks into his tenure, oh, we're not getting 90 minutes out of him. You know, there tends to be either a big push in the first half and then it dwindles, or the second half, they react to something that went wrong in the first half. He doesn't seem to have 90 minutes of coaching in him. And that was before the current crisis. So you sort of feel, oh, no one was totally buying it. And I think also, in spite of the fact he'd been to Scotland and been successful in Scotland, there was this overwhelming sense that he was someone learning the job. So you had him being a relatively new coach, there's always a bit of sniffiness about someone who was a great player getting a plum job. And I know, Tony, you call it the silver spoon in your mouth syndrome. It does feel like you're getting blessed because of who you were as a player as opposed to proving yourself as a manager. So there was that running along as a narrative all the time as well. And I just think that sense of him learning on the job and using the sort of vocabulary he used was about getting more from the players, as though there was a distance between what he'd achieved and was capable of and what they could achieve and were capable of. And you sometimes think, is he asking too much of young players who don't know how to do what he could do? Or does he not understand that if you're not as naturally blessed as he was, that you maybe need something else? What made him a great player doesn't necessarily mean the players he's got at Villa need what he got from his coaches through his life. So it just felt like he was learning his craft. And Villa fans didn't like the fact it was, no matter what anyone said, it felt like a stepping stone to the ultimate job of being manager of Liverpool, which is just, all these factors served to undermine him. And also, I think his demeanour was fantastic in his first few weeks, but then he became stuck in the rut of just looking hangdog and fatalistic. And even when he said words like, I'm a fighter, he didn't look like a fighter. So I didn't cry tears over my Stevie G shirt because it was on the cards for quite a long time.
Mm. Well, neither he or Liz Truss are fighters. We now know that. But at least Steven Gerrard wasn't a quitter, ended up getting sacked instead. What's next for him? What do you think?
That's difficult. I wrote about that at the weekend. That, you know, it's true, all the everything that's just been said about the fact that, you know, it's like people seem to resent the fact that these big stars are given a silver spoon or given plum jobs when people think they're not deserving of them. But it's really hard to know what the alternative is as well. You know, like, it's just totally unrealistic, like the old days, for managers to go down the lower leagues and sort of learn their craft. And it's a different world to anything that they experienced and the standard they are familiar with. So Rangers was a good first job for him. I think Villa was a good, as everyone has been saying, it did feel like a stepping stone. And that's what a lot of the Villa fans and Villa as a club seem to resent a little bit. But it was a good move for him. It was a great move for him. What's next is very hard to envisage. I think, you know, Jamie Carragher came out and said, is he going to... The choice for him now is he a career manager? Does he want to do this for the next 20 years? If so, he may have to take a really good job in the Championship and prove himself and get them back into the Premier League. He may have offers overseas, but the feeling is with Steven Gerrard, who, you know, spent his whole career here, that the Premier League is where he wants to be. So that's his choice, or whether he's willing to hang on and wait for maybe, I don't know, in a similar vein to Frank Lampard getting the Everton job when they were in dire straits, something else might come up and someone might look for a kind of talismanic figure to come and rejuvenate the club. So that's his options. He's got to either hang around and wait for something like that, or be kind of brave and say, and back himself and say, I've got to prove myself again. A little bit like he did at Rangers, although there's even some kind of questions about the extent to which his time there should be seen as entirely positive.
But he's open about the fact he's not a hands-on coach.
That's also very strange in the modern game now, actually.
If you admit that, then you're going to have to be incredibly charismatic, I think. Yeah. And much as I adored him as a player, he's not a charismatic person.
He's got presence.
Mm. And he inspires as well. He's an inspiring player. He just didn't feel like an inspiring manager. It's very hard to say. I mean, look, his association with Liverpool seemed to have gotten it in his way. You know, it just did. Mm-hmm. Because every Liverpool fan, the natural procedure was going to be, well, when Klopp goes from the football club, Steven Gerrard, and I think in some ways Villa fans would get to be annoyed. Be, hold it a minute. He's at our football club. And now it's his time to do as well as he can for Villa. And it just, I don't know.
Tony, I think the Villa fans that I've spoken to, they sort of accepted that at the start because they thought, if he's going to be a good enough coach that Liverpool wants him, then he would have been a brilliant manager for Aston Villa. So we don't really have a huge issue with that. If he's so good that Liverpool can't turn him down, then that means that we're going to have a great few years under him. The thing is, I'm not really sure I can go full I told you so on this, but at the start, we said it was a risk. And the one thing that Steven Gerrard would need is time, because as well
he had nearly a year here.
But for me... it's similar to the Mikel Arteta situation in that, you know that you haven't got a manager with all of that experience. It's his first job in the Premier League. It wasn't like he was Rangers manager for 5 or 6 years either. And so you kind of think it's not going to go perfectly the whole time. And I know a lot of people can turn around and say, well, there's a minimum base for Aston Villa, but they were in the Championship a few years ago. And if you're already saying, well, we need to be minimum mid-table, and I know they've got a very good squad, then actually I think you shouldn't be appointing Steven Gerrard in the first place. Like, if that was your aspiration from the start, he was not the right...
But as always is the case too, there are like broader questions about the way Aston Villa are run as a football club now. Christian Purcell has absolutely got to come under some scrutiny now. You know, he trumpeted the arrival of Buendia, Bailey, who was the third
and Ings.
Ings.
To replace Grealish.
You know, after selling Grealish. And they've all been disastrous. It was very it was very interesting to see. I was at the game at the weekend that all three of those players flourished. So, you know, there's always a balance like that. So Villa, as you're saying, they're not really been an easy club to be manager of for a long, long time. And even under this new ownership, yes, they've got all the money. I think they're the wealthiest owners after the kind of state-owned clubs in the Premier League, but there's been some serious mistakes made there.
And
that's not Gerrard's fault.
And it's a bit like Scotty Parker when he was at Bournemouth and he'd done his final interview and then he says, look, we need a better quality of player. And then Gary O'Neill comes in and they start getting results. And it undermines you as a coach, because Steven Gerrard, they hadn't spent lots of money in the summer. And I know that they wanted to get a striker, but Watkins wasn't his signing, nor was Ings. And they were desperate to try and get a striker. I guarantee you that Steven Gerrard's conversation would have been before Saturday or, you know, the weekend, and just go, they'll turn up this weekend. That happens a lot with managers, where their teams suddenly all turn up. From where did that performance come from? We've seen nothing to relate Villa ever getting a 4-0 victory. I guarantee you that Steven Gerrard probably thought they'll turn up this weekend and Ings will score a brace, and he's missed every chance that he's had in the last month or so. He's missed. Ollie Watkins ain't got going. Yeah. You know, everything that's been the opposite what's happened this season happened in one game.
Should say it was a 4-0 win over Brentford, that result. All of those players you mentioned flourished. Aaron Danks, the first team coach, oversaw the result. Villa Park was a very different mood. It's only their third win of the season. As you mentioned, Gregor, you went to both of their recent games and it was a very contrasting performances.
Yeah, I mean, they were totally abject against Fulham. Fulham are brilliant. We should say that. And it's also said, you know, it's a really strange... I felt a little bit sorry for him, actually, afterwards. He was, you know, wheeled out in front of the media. And everyone's saying afterwards that they thought he knew what was coming. I don't think that's true. I think he understood the situation. He made that very clear. But he didn't know there was a phone call coming, and, you know, 15 minutes later. So I think that was a little bit cruel, really. That's football. And the contrast was remarkable. I mean, as I just said, Bailey, who's been, you know, he's done nothing really, was incredible. He was outstanding. Buendia in number 10, different player than anything, you know, than we've seen for Villa. Ings playing up. The one thing you have to say is a lot of fans have been calling out for a long time for Villa to play 4-2-3-1 because they feel it suits the players that they have. And that's what Danks did. He made that change. Villa often had just three in midfield and three up front, and it didn't really seem to suit certainly the midfielders they had, and possibly you could say Bailey and Watkins as well. So the change worked. Bailey was brilliant on the left. Watkins was excellent on the right. Ings and Buendia linked up brilliantly, and, you know, what can you say? They scored three goals in 14 minutes and it was like, wow.
Yeah, explain John McGinn.
Being left out.
Well, you know, that was one of the calls. Villa, Gregor was just talking there. The Villa fans were wanting John McGinn out of the team. And I think he's been a terrific player. What I've seen this season of John McGinn, as he's become the captain, object. He's just not even been at the races, which has been really strange to see a player of that quality.
Maybe he didn't like being the teacher's pet.
Yeah,
because when Gerrard came in and there were some flaky performances that were saved by McGinn actually being a dynamo in midfield and having that sort of... And everyone said, oh, he's got a bit of Stevie G about him, hasn't he? You know, the way he wears his heart on his sleeve and he feels so passionately about the club. And he did seem to single-handedly grind out a few results for Villa, and then he's promoted as captain by the manager that people are falling out of love with. I don't know, but if you feel the pressure of that, it might affect your performances. Mm. So maybe he was right to drop him, Danks, because it was weighing on him, this sense of being teacher's pet, and maybe he didn't want to be captain.
Okay, so what about this scenario? You've dropped one captain in Tyrone Mings. You've named another one, which Stevie G has done. But Stevie G didn't want to drop his second captain. You know, quite clearly, he stayed with him. So he's not been prepared to go, you're not playing well, you're out of the team. He was subbed 5 times in his 11 Premier League games, John McGinn. Captains don't get subbed that often.
It's very Jordan Henderson does.
Well, yeah, look, that's for different reasons. But generally, a player at 27 years old, which I think John McGinn is, you know, he's not going to be dropped too often. But I thought Gerrard didn't want to get in the scenario of saying, well, hold it, end of last season, you made a change during the summer, you've changed your captain, Tyrone Mings was out of the team, and then he gets to a new captain and he's got thinking in his head, I can't drop my captain again.
You need the old club captain scenario. A little Cesar Azpilicueta doesn't mind being on the bench, you know, and then just give the armband out to whoever on the Saturday.
To be fair, he could have dropped anyone. Villa being woeful. He tried to make a change against Fulham. He brought in Bednarek and put Konsa on right back, and it backfired, you know, really badly because Willian was produced to a performance that no one thought was possible again. Yeah. And he kind of skinned them down the left in the first half. And he brought Matty Cash back in at half time. So, he's been looking for solutions to find a way out of the hole, and he couldn't find them. And as you say, like, the uplift was just remarkable. It was like you saw this liberation, and it's not uncommon. We've seen it many times before, but I just can't remember having seen it in so many players and so quickly. It was a pretty amazing place to be, actually, in that first 15 minutes.
Where now for Aston Villa? There were links to Mauricio Pochettino. Don't know if he'll take the job. I actually think it would be a good job for him, but some saying that he, you know, wants to be in a higher level.
It would be a job for him, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, how long is he going to stay out for?
He's been coaching Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, it's Aston Villa still, so he might have higher, more lofty aspirations, like a Champions League club, possibly.
Well, Emery went to Arsenal from PSG. It's not... It's dissimilar.
So, well, it is. Come on, Arsenal and Aston Villa. I think the project, the building of a project would be something good for Pochettino. I think he could harness that sense of the community, the togetherness of a football club and help him in that way. And I think there are good players at Aston Villa as well. But I don't think, you know, even if he goes there, I'm not going to say they're going to be a top four.
I don't think he's taking that.
Where's he going to end? Well, if he's not, who is then?
Can I just say
they've been linked with the sporting manager,
Ruben Amorim.
Yes. Yeah. So, and you know, there's been a report he's got a 10 million euro clause in his contract. So, look, so it's amazing as well. After, you know, a guy who no one had heard of in Danks before, some people are still managing to ask the question after the game, like, you know, do you think you've got a chance for the job?
Well, you got to ask.
It was some game, you know, some first game in the dugout. But I mean, come on, let's be realistic.
Are we all saying that Poch is too good for Aston Villa?
No, I'm not saying that. I just don't think he's going to take the job. I think he probably has got higher aspirations. He probably thinks he's been working in the Champions League for, what, 6-7 years?
Yeah, he got sacked at PSG, and PSG had lost the title to Lille as well in the time he was there as a manager. They had a horrendous time in the Champions League, which they were quite cruising for a period and then get knocked out. You know, Poch's jobs, do I think he's a good coach? Yeah, quite clearly. And I think he's... For certain projects, yeah, I get it. But I don't think he's too big for Aston Villa at all. I wouldn't go down that road because he hasn't really won anything. He's won the French League in France. He's won the Cup as well. But, you know, PSG really have to win everything, you know, in France.
I think the theme's going to be pressure, pressure on, pressure off. It was too much in the end for Gerrard at Aston Villa. They move on and they pick up a big 3 points this weekend. Big 3 points for Leicester as well. They picked up their first away Premier League win of the season, thrashing Wolves, moving off the bottom of the table as well and out of the relegation zone. Is the pressure totally off Brendan Rodgers, Alison?
Well, it's off for now. If they string together a couple of, you know, defeats and drab draws, and it'll be back on. But he's come through that wall of people like me saying, oh, he's gone, you know, tomorrow morning he'll be gone. But there was not the will to sack him emotionally or financially, it seems. And he stayed. And the act of staying can have two effects. You can make it work, or you just go into a spiral of awfulness. And they didn't go into a spiral of awfulness. I think they've been quite lucky with their fixtures, who they've come up against. But I mean, Tony, you said it week in, week out. They've got some excellent players at Leicester. It was ridiculous. And the reason I thought he'd go was because there's no excuses at Leicester. There's some great, great players, particularly in the forward line.
Yeah, well,
look at the goals. I mean, the classy finishes of the weekend. I mean, there are players there that you'd lust after if you were any other manager apart from outside the top four, maybe. Really, yeah. Lust after. So that the differential between what he had and where he was in the table was so huge, I felt he should go. But if they can start clicking again, then they'll probably rise up the table quite quickly and he'll be fine.
And the vultures would be hanging over Leicester City if they was ever going to get rid of their manager and thought they could take some of their players. I mean, Wolves would love to have had a Vardy or even in Iheanacho, who's not playing, Daka, Maddison, Barnes. All of them are going to get you goals. And I was chatting to Gregor last week about this, and we were talking about teams that could go down. And I just said, I can't believe that team could go down with forwards that offer so much that can win you games. Look, they've got the perfect opposition. They're playing a team that couldn't buy a goal. You know, but Wolves would love to have any of them forwards that I've just mentioned.
Wolves were the better team in large parts of that match as well, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, you've never seen that. There's never been a game that kind of underlines how much goals change games. Yeah. Like, I think Steve Davis said they had 7 attempts in the first 15 minutes. They were really on top. There's a good graphic in the game today as well, saying I think they had like 21 attempts or something, and Costa had 8 himself. But you know, Tielemans' moment of magic, what a strike! And then Barnes just kind of absolutely burns Johnny, and they're 2-0 up. That's, you know, it's a long way back for them, and just sucks the atmosphere and the confidence and the life out of Molyneux. So, yeah, Tony's bang on. They've got players that can do that. We've always known they were there, they just haven't been doing it. So, if they, you know, a few of them start to find form. And they're looking a little bit more solid at the back. You know, Fyshe at the back is, I think, he's been made a big improvement. I think they've got 4 clean sheets in the last 5 games. I still think they're short there. Like Amarty, he might get away with it for a few games, but he's not a central defender in the Premier League. Johnny Evans isn't fit. They're struggling. So long term, they still need, I think, to be more solid at the back. But no, I don't think they're going down.
Steve Davis in charge of Wolves until the new year is a very big call for a Premier League club to make, though. Do you think that decision may risk their top flight status?
It's hard to ever judge, and it's a bit unfair because I don't know him. And watching,
you do.
What do you answer?
Go
the
on
question
then, Greg.
He was my manager at Crewe Alexandra. It's been really bizarre actually to see him elevated to this point. And Scott Sellers, who was assistant manager when I was at Chesterfield, is the guy who's now there. They're all calling his name from the stands in not pleasant terms. He's the technical director, and he's kind of been elevated from the academy role under Jeff Shee. And I think the fans feel they've done that on the cheap. He's kind of climbed the ranks. Mm. Kevin Thirlwell, I think it was, that left, and Shee's taken on a lot of the responsibility himself, along with George Mendes, as we know. I've seen these two guys who I've worked with in lower league football now running a Premier League club. It's quite odd.
That's where you should be, Gregor. At least Scottish Premiership.
I know for a fact they were down the pub last night saying that Gregor Robertson.
He's going to hammer
us. He was a so-so player, and now he's on the Game podcast. Can't believe it.
So the ultimately the question what Hugh was asking. So tell us what do you think is going to happen between now and?
Well, Davis is a coach. I never thought. I don't want to be derogatory here because he's a nice guy. I don't think that. Being a manager was his forte. He was a coach. He was good in the training ground. The truth is, a lot of people who come through Crewe as a football club, that's the case. James Collins, his assistant, was at Crewe as well, so I know him as well. He's a coach. I wouldn't see him standing in Wolves changing room with Diego Costa and some of the big players they have there and having all that much authority. I don't say that as a slight to him, but I think that would be the truth. He's a good coach, but I don't think that's what they need right now. They need someone who's going to kind of.
But they were embarrassed. I think they said that about keeping him till the end of the World Cup because they were embarrassed that they weren't getting.
Well, they were turned down
quickly.
By two.
No one wants to be turned down.
Nobody wants to be turned down. Lopetegu and
McBeal. Yeah.
So it's like, where do we go from
here? And that was really public. The whole Beal thing was so public. And basically, what they've been told. Basically, Beal saying no means effectively, whether. feel meant it this way or not. It effectively means someone is saying, I have more chance of being in the Premier League next season, staying in a Championship club, than going to this particular struggling Premier League club because they're going in the wrong direction. That's you know, your dirty linen in public being washed. Do they, that's why they said, oh, we're not looking for a manager now.
See,
it's
I would
too embarrassing.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, you can get in a lot of trouble in October because there's a lot of games. So if you're going to prepare to take the risk to get to the new year, and yes, because of the World Cup, and think you're going to get more time, I know from being in football a long time, and as all of us do, that every job that comes up, there is loads of applicants. Now, you've got to interview quite a few people, but you'll have a really good choice of managers that you believe could do, which is the job of keeping Wolves up this season. Now, to say go into the new year, if it's a dreadful October, you could be quite a well adrift. So that's a big call for the club to make for me.
It's just all very confusing. Like, we're talking about Edwards, who was sat by Watford, coming in on a sort of interim assistant basis as well, because he used to work there years ago in the academy. Like, what, you know, even McBeal was a massive pivot from what they've been doing. So, like, there seems to be a lot of confusion at the top of that club, and that doesn't bode well. And I think they really thought, after seeing Davis doing, you know, leading the team, they did not bad at Chelsea, and then they got a win. I think they probably thought, you know, we can probably just get by until the World Cup. I think they've had a rude awakening now.
Maybe they're not on the same page at Wolves. According to Jesse Marsh, Leeds are all on the same page. He says, we're completely united. He talked about the fans. He also spoke about the players, the hierarchy at the club. You know, I saw the word alter trending at the weekend. Jesse Marsh is under huge pressure and does face, I think, a pretty uncertain future. Fulham coming from behind to win at Elland Road at the weekend, and it left Leeds in the Premier League's bottom three without a win in 8 games, 6 of those being defeats. Boos ringing around Elland Road at full time. Is he going to be the next manager to go, do you think, Alison?
Yeah, he's the victim of masochism. I don't know how you manage in that environment. Leeds fans, they've done it before, they're doing it again. They want it to all go wrong. They're urging it to go wrong. If you're singing Bielsa's name when you're in a relegation fight, you're only going to make it worse, because it's by Jesse Marsh failing, it makes Bielsa look even more like a god. It's like all that matters is the legacy of Bielsa. It's like some sort of cult, some sort of mad religion going on.
Oh, this is bold. This is bold stuff.
No. Don't interrupt.
It's utterly ludicrous. I cannot put myself in the shoes of a supporter who, when the team are fighting in an important game where you think you can win, they should be able to beat Fulham. And that you're hearing negativity from the stands. And the manager, no matter what you think about the manager, he's not done anything ridiculously wrong. He's got a very, very weak... I think he's got the weakest squad in the Premier League, actually. If you look at their lineup, you think nobody covets anyone here. They look depleted to me. They look just like a Championship club in terms of the personnel they have. And he's doing his best. He's trying to be slightly imaginative with what he's got. And he's hearing the fans calling for the guy he replaced. He's not coming back, Bielsa. So there's absolutely no point. There's no point doing it. And it's slightly crueler than the Villa fans singing "You're Getting Sacked" in the morning to Steven Gerrard, because that's a relationship between them and him, and it's very specific to that. And they're just voicing the fact they think this has gone wrong. This is really peculiar masochism. It's like I say, it's like they want it to go. They don't want him to succeed, because if he succeeds, that's just ever so slightly dilutes what Bielsa did. And we don't want that happening, do we?
Okay. I'm going to have to disagree with that. Because when they beat Chelsea, the way that felt was like they'd moved on that day. That's what all the kind of local reporters, all the kind of fan sentiment in the aftermath of that game was that today was the day that we left Bielsa behind and we welcomed Jesse Marsh. And the problem is, it's gone tits up. There's no, you know, he's saying he's not done anything drastically wrong. I have sympathy for him, because we've seen flashes of what he wants his team to look like. Chelsea, Arsenal last week.
Yeah.
They were good. But they can't defend. They couldn't defend under Bielsa. And a lot of that was put down to the way that he set the team out. Man-marking, ridiculously kind of wild, you know, buccaneering football. It's also because they have rubbish defenders. They have defenders who are, at best, championship players. And they've never improved their back line. Mm-hmm. A lot of these goals are the goals they conceded against Fulham were
absolutely
just so poor,
horrendous.
So Jesse Marsh wants aggression and energy and, like, you know, front foot football. That's what Leeds are all about. And then they concede goals and it just sucks. It's the same as Wolves. It just sucks the life out of the team. It sucks the
life
out of the
stadium.
How are
you disagreeing with me then?
Because if any manager goes 8 games without a win in the Premier League, they're almost certain to be gone. So he's, whatever happens, he's got to find results or else he's off.
But how much responsibility of that run do you put to him?
It's the same with every club. There's always mitigating factors. So they can't score goals. They're still relying on Patrick Bamford. Like, I absolutely put that down to the people who run the club. So I'm saying I have sympathy for Jesse Marsh, but he's got to do something to find a way to get a result and to find a way to stop conceding the goals they're conceding. So,
a little bit unlucky with Rodrigo, who got injured, and then he come back at the weekend.
Yeah, they were saying he was going to have a good season. I think that was his fifth goal of the season.
Yeah,
Bamford's come back, and, like, I think I read again that he's tops the list of, like, big chances missed. He's got personal XG of 4 and not scored a goal. Like,
but what you've got to say,
it's just so familiar.
Bamford, he's not fit at the moment. He played, I think, 64 minutes.
It wouldn't matter if he was fit. It's so familiar.
No, but listen, when he came back into the team, even he's coming back from the injury, in terms of how high up the pitch they're able to play, he moves them up the pitch. More touches in the box usually when he plays, not just for him, but the players also in the front line with him. You know, he is currently a very good player at this level. Once he's fit and firing, he'll be even better. He is just not the goal scorer, and he never really has been. You know, we speak about he's not the quickest, he's not the strongest, but he's an intelligent player. He helps their forward line. If he had been fit all season, and really fit, you know, at top level, they're a different team.
He still might have missed the most big chances.
But I'm not saying
he might have a few goals.
I'm not saying that he would have scored a bucket load, but the results of the team might have been better.
My only point is, how can Leeds United still be in a position to be relying on Patrick Bamford to score their goals? And how can Leeds United still have Liam Cooper as their centre half and their captain? And Koch, who's come in and, like, really flattered to deceive, he's done okay. They're playing Stroik at left, an auxiliary left back, and the only other left back they have is Firpo, who's mince. So, like, they can't defend.
I haven't heard that one.
They can't defend. Yeah, so I don't like to dig at people personally like that, but it's been so like obvious and glaring ever since they've been in the Premier League, and they've done nothing about it.
Now,
that's not Jesse Marsh's fault.
It's a tricky one that if you said, you know, pick every Premier League team and you go, right, name your best two players from your group of players. Okay, you said Rafinha and Calvin Phillips. They were quite clearly the best two players at Leeds. You've ended up selling them. If you did that at every club, if I was to say, I don't know, let's go Man City, let's get rid of Haaland and we'll get rid of De Bruyne, would that come at a cost? Absolutely. You know, any manager will say to you, we can't get rid of them. Leeds have sold them, got lots of money, and I think Aronson's done okay. Looks a real live wire, looks a decent player. Rodrigo's got going where after a period of been not looking like he's going to get many goals. But generally, I think they've paid a heavy price for selling two very important players, influential players at Leeds United. And you compound that with, as Greg has said, that defensively, they're awful. But if you're awful defensively, you have to do something about it as a coach. You know, you can't concede 3 goals and expect to win games. You're going to pay a heavy price.
A little bit of praise for Fulham. Played well again. Back-to-back wins for them. 6 goals scored in those 2 games. Looking pretty healthy.
Willian, where's he come from?
Brazil, I think.
Well, yeah. He got chased out of Brazil. His family received death threats. You know, he's had a tough 2 years. He had an awful season at Arsenal where he was being pilloried.
Yeah.
He went back home to Brazil and he had I think it was not a great time on the pitch, but not disastrous. But still, for some reason, he was getting targeted and he felt he had to leave. He said, I'm never going back to play in Brazil again. So I think people, when they saw him arrive, were thinking, really? 34, Willian after that? but the last two games he's been outstanding. And Fulham just seem able to kind of switch one or two players and still kind of reach the same standards. They've been brilliant. They were excellent against Villa as well.
Yeah, Mitrovic is... I mean, Rafa Benitez, I always got frustrated with him at Newcastle when he deemed him not really good enough. And he's a player that's got an incredible amount of goals for Serbia. He's done it on all different levels. And even when he was at in Fulham and the last time when Scotty Parker had him, Scotty Parker used to drop him quite often in games, especially towards the end when they got relegated. And I always just think, strange thing to do, drop someone who can take a chance. He's not the quickest, but he causes problems and he sort of fits into the way that Fulham play. I thought he would do well to get 10 goals for Fulham this year. He's nearly on that now, isn't he? What's he got, nine Premier League goals?
I've tipped him to be the Golden Boot winner at the World Cup. Oh. If you want to know why, one reason why Fulham are doing really well, you watch the number of goal celebrations where all the players run to Marco Silva and give him a hug. They are a very happy club, and they haven't been a very happy club for quite a while.
So answer this, Al. So how comes when he was at Everton, there seemed to be a really bad relationship with the Evertonian or the Everton players and him? He had a very difficult time at Everton.
Who doesn't?
Football's a mystery.
No.
Football's a mystery like that, though. So sometimes it's just like relationships and the way that they're thrown together. I mean, also, he's achieved something last season there. He didn't do that ever.
They know him now. Yeah. They know him.
Yeah.
I just... You know, he's successful with his methods. They've bought into him. But there's that extra thing. I bet if you analysed every single goal celebration this season in the Premier League, there would have been more involving the manager of Fulham than the manager of any other club.
Okay, we'll look it up with Opta, find out the stats. Go on.
I was just going to say, we've said about...
Is that a stat?
Paulinho.
No.
Alisson Radstat.
I was just going to say, we've said about Paulinho and Reid before, but they get better and better. That is a brilliant pairing. And Pereira in front of them is growing with every week.
He is, yeah.
So,
yeah. I'm always amazed. I mean, like I said, when Fulham went down, I couldn't believe that Harrison Reid didn't get picked up by a Premier League club.
Absolutely.
I just watch him every week, and he's a Premier League player. Great once again, and yeah, it's all clicking, except for that one-on-one, Andreas Pereira. Absolutely, just ridiculous. Ridiculous. Yeah. Just as a former Man United player, just you got to put that away. Anyway, listen, that is our first half of the podcast. Much more still to come. Remember, if you're enjoying it, make sure you're subscribed. We'll be talking about Nottingham Forest. Huge win for them. Everton and Newcastle as well.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Well, we've been discussing pressure on managers, and one who rode out a 9-game winless run earlier in the season was Nottingham Forest Steve Cooper, but they stunned Liverpool at the City Ground this weekend, beating them 1-0, leaving them 12 points behind the leaders as well. It was a massive result for everyone involved with Forest. They did ride their luck at times, thanks mainly to Virgil van Dijk, but it is now just 2 goals conceded in their last 4 games, Tony. When you compare that to the 16 conceded in the 4 games before that, it's kind of easy to know where the changes have paid dividends.
Really? Did you watch the game? You just said at the start of that. I've never seen a team defend so badly from set pieces.
And keep a clean sheet.
A clean sheet. I was shocked what I was witnessing. I kept thinking, well, if Forest defend like that from set pieces, they're going to lose a lot of games between now and the end of the season. You can say brilliant character. Everyone kept going. The boy Yates in midfield, Cook at the back. Dean Henderson in goal did brilliantly. But for a team to give so many chances away and Liverpool not punish them, I thought this result was a really weird one, because that's the worst I've seen Liverpool play for a long time. And there was a lot of experienced players that were really poor for Liverpool. But Forest kept in the game. But this wasn't a performance that was tactically brilliant. This isn't a big praise from me, because what I witnessed was, you're going to get beat a lot of times between now and the end of the season.
Tony's animated, guys.
Yes, okay, so. Well, no, I'm not. I'm not coming from being Liverpool. No, yeah. Liverpool. That's my club. Okay, I don't want to take anything away from Forest. But if any Forest fan thinks that that performance is going to get them results during the course of the season, you're wrong. You can't keep giving chances from every set piece.
But it will give them a boost, won't it? Because they beat Liverpool. Yeah. So even if they shouldn't have beaten Liverpool, what that will do for their self-confidence is palpable, surely.
And you're bang on about set pieces, but I think from open play they've defended considerably better than they have been, and a lot of that is because they've gone to 4 at the back, 3 in front of them. They've kind of, they're willing to sit and soak up more pressure. They're far less open, particularly like through the centre of the pitch. So many times the back three have just been exposed up until now. So, you know, that formation change, I think he probably deserves a bit of credit for. And then they're trying to play in the counter-attack. I wanted to talk about Ryan Yates, though, because he's like, he's one of those players where the Forest fans haven't even been a big fan of him for so long. He's one of the, that sometimes happens with an academy player. It comes through. There are players with more ability, you know, far flashier. And when the team's not going well, they want somebody to get on the back of. Yeah. And it's been him for a long time. But every single Forest have been through a lot of managers, and every single manager has picked Ryan Yates. And he's growing, even in the Premier League. You know, Joe Worrall's been dropped. He's the captain. He's wearing the captain in captain's armband in the Premier League for his local club. And Steve Cooper came out and praised him afterwards. He's got some heart, and like, he's kind of energy, his fitness, his industry, all those things. It doesn't matter what level he's playing at. He ran all over Liverpool's midfield and he stood out. He was probably the best player on the pitch. A friend of mine coached him in the academy at Forest, and he said when he was like 16, him and Ben Brereton and Diaz, they were the two. He said, like, whatever you ask them to do, they will do it. They'll run, they will two-foot their own granny. And, you know, it's taken a bit of time, but it's proven to be the case. Yeah. It's all about attitude at the end of the day, and he's got as good an attitude as any footballer, anyone who's worked with him, has ever seen before.
When Forest attack, I don't know if you've seen the film Jumanji, but you know when the board game, the music starts coming out of it. Like, you get that feeling inside the City Ground that something pretty big is about to happen. A stampede might run through your living room in a moment, which I think they need to sort of harness that if they're going
to, you know. It's interesting. That is why I didn't have them as at the start of the season as a club to go down. I thought their home atmosphere would see them through. And if they can keep that going, winning when they perhaps shouldn't. But, you know, there was this force of will, which is in stark contrast to what you hear from the Leeds United fans. It doesn't matter how shite they've been, they give them the support.
Yeah, they've stuck by Cooper. In fact, you could go as far as to say they kept Steve Cooper on a job. Mm. If they'd start to turn on Cooper, I'm pretty sure Marinakis, the owner, would have pulled the trigger. He would have been happy to. But he's got that bit of extra time, and he's got a massive win.
Did we write off Forest too soon, or do you think they're still...
No, I think they're still in trouble. I understand that the courage and the performance, the determination, people like Yates that Greg is talking about, I get all of that. The thing is, Liverpool are easy to play against at the moment. That's clear as day. Just look at the teams they played this year, and teams have played really well against Liverpool, and Liverpool have been found wanting. You know, every Liverpool fan should have a really concerned about how they're getting beat. And this has become a bit of a common theme this season. Really quickly, there's a lot of experienced players playing really poorly for Liverpool.
It's a fragility thing now, because Thiago got an ear infection, didn't he? And so that was a last-minute blow on the day. And it should never matter.
Said Eric in the report today.
Should never matter. Eric? Should never matter if one player gets an earache.
No, a club like Liverpool.
But it's like if you have so many blows, so many knocks, both with results, performances, and injuries, and then you get another one on match day, you probably get that sort of complex about it. I felt Liverpool just felt a bit picked on by the gods, and that's.
I saw an ex-Liverpool player, I'm not even going to mention their name, at the weekend, but they remarked about Thiago's reported ear infection by saying, you know, that's something that your kid comes home with. It's a, you know, it's,
in fairness,
it's
hospital,
not a proper...
I've had an ear infection. Oh my God.
Yeah, agony.
It's more painful than childbirth. So shut up.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Well, I can't answer that one, but I can say it's very painful.
Painful result for Liverpool this weekend. Beaten away at Nottingham Forest, but great for Steve Cooper. And another manager who I think received the support that he needed at the right time, particularly from his home fans, was the Everton boss, Frank Lampard. He continued their resurgence. And also ended a run, in fact, of three straight defeats with an impressive victory over Crystal Palace at Goodison Park. What do we make of Everton so far this season?
Well, here we have a manager who is visibly learning the craft of being a manager in front of our very eyes. And the comparison with Stevie Gerrard is really tempting, because I don't think Steven Gerrard handled what he said and how he said it as things were going wrong for him. And Frank Lampard in the past has said things that, you know, haven't quite sounded great, like he was being defeatist or what, just didn't sound great. He's learned now. He understands the club, and he's learned, and he's managed to keep Everton through their bad patch, not feeling like they were in a bad patch. He has done that. It's not quite smoke and mirrors, but he's done that thing where he's looked confident, sounded confident, sounded like, you know, we've got a long term thing going at this club. We're gonna improve. We're gonna get better, and he's brought everyone in on it. So he hasn't had booing, and the players don't look like they want to do anything other than do really well for him. So this felt like a result that was coming, and if there had been a crisis, I don't think anyone would have noticed there was. Down mainly to the fact of how Frank Lampard explained defeats and sounded like he's being really honest when they hadn't played well, but so that, which meant that you believed him when he said they hadn't got the result, but they had played well and things would come together, and they'd been unlucky with injuries, and that was proven out because now they've got Calvert-Lewin starting. They can look like they're sharper. So I think Lampard is 3 years, maybe slightly more, ahead of Steven Gerrard in terms of how to navigate the world of difficult times in your managerial life.
Could Stephen G and Frankie Lampard manage together?
Look, it's what England fans want, I think.
What I would say is that he's done a mini Arteta. I felt that Tarkowski coming into the club and Connor Cody as a centre-half pairing has worked brilliantly. He knew that Keane and Holgate were not the solution going into this season. Onana coming into midfield has added plus. Alex Iwobi, who isn't he? You know, we talk about players who have changed their career, and where did that come from? We talked about, you know, over the weeks about Xhaka at Arsenal. Where does this come from? You could put Almiron in there. You know, his performances for Newcastle. Where does that come from? Iwobi's, for me, is that player at Everton. He's come in. He's done tremendous for them in a role that Frankie Lampard has designed him to do. And with that, keeping Anthony Gordon at the football club, you know, that Chelsea were trying to get him. All these things put together, you feel like, as Alisson said, he's moulded a team in there now that have got a lot of legs. They can get around the pitch and they're really good at doing that. So there's a lot better team in there.
See, I find this fascinating. Everton before the weekend were a point ahead of Leeds and Villa. And yet there was, and they'd lost three games in a row. And yet there was no conversation about
because
Frank Lampard.
Because of his demeanour.
Exactly. You make made good points. Like he's,
I had a conversation the week before.
The atmosphere at the club is so important. It's so important. And Frank Lampard, you're right, he has done something to kind of get the, to manage, he's able, been able to get the supporters on side. He's signed players who are making a difference. And like, I feel that almost the supporters can relate to as well. They see their sort of their effort and they're going out and they're leaving everything out on the pitch. That's so important. But it's the lines are, the margins are so fine. Like if they'd lost this game, they Frank Lampard's the guy we're talking about all week about the next one on the chopping block. You know,
well,
like, it's very fragile. And
well, look. Another comparison is with Jesse Marsh because they were the two managers who at the death saved their teams from the drop last season. Mm. But one of them has managed to turn that into a positive and the other, it's hampering him. It's a weight round his neck.
If you go back to the weekend before, Palace were 1 point in front of Aston Villa. Patrick Vieira was deemed to be doing a great job.
Oh, that's complete smoke and mirrors. No, Crystal Palace.
Yes, but this is what I'm saying is that, you know, such fine lines between people week in, week out that we're talking about.
There's a total love in for Vieira and the results aren't there. It's very strange.
Go on.
Yeah, I think it's a wee bit harsh. I think Palace are. We spoke of them last week. Yeah. I think they're one
they're
of the most
pretty.
Interesting clubs.
They're very pretty and they're interesting, but I would say they're not. They're not out of trouble.
No, I mean, look, this is what we're learning. I think there's not very much between a lot of the clubs outside probably the top eight. Mm. There's not much between them. You know, there's going to be a few are guaranteed to be in the shake up for, you know, battle and relegation, and then there's the rest of them are always going to be two bad results away from getting sucked into.
Vieira admitted his team didn't have the appetite. They couldn't match Everton's appetite. I think that's quite an admission, but he won't get any criticism for it.
Mm. We should also quickly say that Gordon's goal, were it not for that offside flag, you know, that kind of slightly diminished the celebrations and stuff. What a goal. What a team move from back to front. And, you know, he scored the goal, the flag went up and it was like, ah, oh, and then it was obviously given. It spoiled it for me. And then the third goal as well, quickly. It will be his little back heel for McNeil. Some great football. There was some great football by Everton at the weekend.
Having an athletic team that show their incredible energy. They've showed that, Everton, in recent weeks. Even though they've lost some of the games, you can see the energy in their side that he's created. You know, Iwobi, I was looking at, I always do my team of the week. I've had Iwobi in three or four times. Because of how much of an impact he's made. I had a pal who's a big Arsenal fan, and he used to call him, he won't be. Right? Honestly, he said to me, he won't be, he'll never make it, right, as an Arsenal fan. And I laughed because it's a funny line. And then when he went to Everton, I think the Everton fans thought, he won't be. Now, I'm telling you, he can be because he's really come on.
Brilliant.
I think one of the reasons there wasn't that big pressure on Frank Lampard is the three defeats in a row were against Manchester United, only by a goal, a 2-0 defeat at Tottenham, 1-0 against Newcastle as well. So I don't think there was that big pressure because of the opponent. I actually think this win will put some credit in the bank because of the nature of the victory. Played well, scored good goals that you mentioned. A 3-0 win against the Crystal Palace side that was perceived to be, you know, very upwardly mobile. The next sort of four Premier League games will be interesting. Fulham away, Leicester City at home. They go away to Bournemouth. They've got Wolves at home. In the middle of there, they'll play an EFL Cup game against Bournemouth as well. But Leeds, I know that goes right up to Boxing Day. So again, it will be over an elongated period of time. But if those four games go badly, then you'd imagine there would be big pressure on Lampard.
I should say Leeds, on the other hand, they've got Liverpool and Tottenham away, either side of Bournemouth at home. So, you know, he's undoubtedly the one who's closest to the end.
They'll pick up points. They'll continue getting a good return. I see a different energy about Everton.
Just about time to talk about Newcastle, who were into the top four. They went to Spurs and won 2-1. It was a pretty debatable incident that led to their first goal. Callum Wilson colliding with Hugo Lloris. Tottenham weren't happy. Antonio Conte not happy about this. Hugo himself. Did anyone think the goal should have been disallowed?
Well, no. I wish it had been, because anything against sports washing is good for me. And but I see, even with that hat on, I couldn't see how it should be disallowed. I thought it made Lloris look rather pathetic, actually.
Yeah, he's waving his hand like, as you know, me, the referee's
me.
Crazy.
Hurt me.
Like, no, it was poor goalkeeping. And Callum Wilson was right. He's like, what would you expect me to get out of the way? Like, I can't get out of the way. We're both running to get towards the ball, and we collided. So
I thought
Callum
Wilson was quite polite, actually.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, you know, I think it might have been disallowed had he just run full pelt into Hugo Lloris.
Yeah,
but he did everything he could to slow down, and Lloris just carried through into him. So good, we cleared that up. I mean, I don't think it was in debate, really.
Maybe it's just me, but I've always felt that Tottenham could never challenge for the title with Lloris in goal. And some people say, well, hold it, he's won the World Cup. Yeah. Well, World Cup is a cup competition that you were in a very, very good team. And one of the best teams around, certainly at that time, in 18.
Exactly, so it doesn't matter.
No. I think the game before, he's played against Man United. He pulled off save after save after save and kept the score down to 2-0. But Lloris will do what he does quite regularly. The second goal was even worse for me, because he's tried to pick out a pass that isn't on. That is not on that ball. And he's not good enough with his feet to be able to do that.
All right, OK. That's Hugo Lloris put in his place. What about Newcastle United? To go back to the topic on, I guess, managers who had been under pressure. We know why the big money spent, the new takeover, I think, alleviated that pressure on Eddie Howe in the new year, in January, in fact. But ultimately, now they look like a side that could do something to stir things up at the top of the Premier League sooner rather than later, ahead of schedule, if you like, in terms of the sports washing project Alison mentioned. But how good are they, you know, in terms of what we see out there on the pitch? 4 wins, 5 draws, only 1 defeat so far this season.
Yeah, and that was a 98th minute winner at Anfield. They're just so hard to beat. They're not conceding goals. They've conceded the fewest goals, conceded 10 goals. They look like a well-coached team. Like, no matter what, you look at the names on the team sheet and they don't look like a team that are going to challenge for the top four at all, in my view. But you look at them as a collective, and the way that they press and the way that they defend as well as a kind of unit, and the way that they now actually are starting to control games with players like Guimaraes, and the way that Wilson is really kind of looking like a player, like a proper number nine that can score the goals that'll see them climb the league. Like, there's always going to be caveats. He's injury prone. Can Almiron keep up this kind of form? Because we've never seen it before. I don't think they're going to challenge for the top four, but they are certainly ahead of schedule. And as I say, it's actually the biggest thing is, it looks like a really impressive feat of coaching by Eddie Howe.
Yeah, absolutely. He's changed goalkeeper, back four, added to the midfield. Players that, like Joe Linton, who covers every blade of grass, has been superb for Newcastle in that area. I think Joe Willock comes in and does another energy. Botman's done terrific from Lille. I saw a lot of him at Lille, and he was always he comes through the Ajax academy, you know, of getting the ball, playing it and being comfortable. He's 6'3" and he's a hell of a beast of a player. And I just think they've got a wonderful attitude to everybody. If you said to me the team from the goalkeeper to the back line, midfield and forward line, who gives so much, I'll put Newcastle up there. The attitude of the whole team is exceptional. Every one of them covers the other player on the pitch.
Yeah, I think they were absolutely fantastic. Again, the coordinated press from the far front. Miggy Almiron, another goal. I still think Jack Grealish was right on the day he said what he said. Officially, he couldn't see into the future, so I'm not criticising him for that. But I do think it was interesting to hear what Antonio Conte said afterwards, just to reflect on Spurs. Alisson, Spurs cannot work miracles, says Conte. We need time and patience, and also, for sure, money.
There's this push and tug thing going on between Conte and the board, and it's always there. And I think we're all going to get really bored of it, actually. There's this constant narrative which is fed. I don't know if it comes from him or his people, which is it's his project. And the minute he doesn't feel in control of the project, he's gone. There's a very temporary air about Conte. So when they're winning and he's, you know, running up and down the touchline looking like he's the most passionate coach you'll ever see in the history of coaching, that's great. He's like one like a spoilt child in some respects. They're just lovely when everything's going well, but when they're not, he gets quite moody, makes complaints, and immediately paints it as the club not being ambitious enough. There was enough out there. There really was enough out there on the pitch to have got a result against Newcastle. Like you were saying, Gregor, you look at the lineups.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
who would you rather have in your team? Almost all of the Spurs Absolutely. Players. Absolutely. And they did have depth. They do have depth on the bench. Sure, they have some injuries, but everybody does. And I think they have more than anyone else. So there are a few things you think, well, this is surely down to Conte and not the club's ambitions. Something like, why isn't Son as effective week in, week out as he has been in the past? He seems to be going in spurts. I don't, is that down to how he's playing? Is that down to what he's being told by the manager? Is he restricting him in some way? Because he can be quite, attention to detail and restrict some sense of flair sometimes. So I think if there's a problem at Spurs, it's that they need to have this continuity of approach, as opposed to when they win, it's like fireworks go off. Everything's brilliant. Everything's superb. And they're going to win the title. They're going to do well in Europe. It's going to be amazing. And the minute they don't, it's the club doesn't have ambition. And this is the constant narrative now coming out, I suppose. And that will have the long-term effect of being debilitating so that they don't achieve anything domestically or abroad.
Can I just add to that? Well, if we've done a composite between the two teams, I ain't changing the goalkeeper. I'm having Pope. I'm having Trippier at right back. I'm having Botman and Shah at centre half. So I'm having the left back as well, Dan Burn, who, by the way, I thought was terrific yesterday as well. For me, I don't get how Spence hasn't been given a chance. You know, they've had all these changes in wide areas. Spence was brilliant for Nottingham Forest. Why hasn't he played? Why hasn't he started? You know, in this Tottenham team that quite clearly are not as good. I said a lot last week about Spurs. I found them a hard watch, and this week has sort of justified that. Their get-out is always the front two. If they didn't have anything close to what Kane and Son can do, this team would be mid-table. It really would. The midfield is a strange midfield. Bentancur's a very good footballer, but it just doesn't feel... there's something not right. The continual passing between the two centre-halves is relentless. That I feel they slow the game all the time, where... I used to get annoyed when Matip and Van Dijk used to do it at Liverpool, because I think Liverpool at their best, they move the ball really quickly from the centre-half position. And when they don't, they look quite a lethargic team. Now, watching Spurs, that's exactly what I feel about Spurs, is why they're a hard watch, because they take a long time to get things forward.
Kulusevski, I mean, we've said it before, he's such an important player now, and you see that more and more when he's not in the team, because he is the link player, I think. He's a player who can hold the ball up until other players join him in attack. He's the player who can spring or whip the crosses in for Kane and so on. You know, he's really important, and they miss him terribly just now. But the other thing that just leaps out for me is, for a manager that's so wedded to a certain formation and style of play, i.e. having wing-backs, I don't think he has one wing-back out of five that he wants to play, really. I think Perisic is the closest thing, but he's a 33-year-old converted winger.
Why has Spence not played then, Gregor?
His player.
I don't know. He came on the other week, but he's gone back to Emerson Royale now. Mm. And Doherty did not bad when he stepped in. Yeah. So he's obviously not happy with him.
I was surprised to see Doherty ahead of Spence, a new signing who played great last season.
But the fact remains, he's not happy with any of them. So... He's so wedded to a certain way of playing.
This is permeating the club, I think. This sense that he's not happy. It's not quite good enough for him. Do you see what I mean?
I do, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's always like the club's got to keep pace with Conte's ambitions, basically. Yeah.
Instead of him revelling in what he's got. And he has a lot.
And he has more than many of his predecessors. Really have had for
it's quite obvious from the outside. This was the problem at Chelsea. You know, that his demands on Chelsea as a football club were always... way more than the owner, who did invest incredibly at Chelsea. It felt like it was the common theme for him at a club. He only left Inter because he was owed money. If you read the story from Italy, he was owed money, so he didn't leave Inter immediately. So he waited for that. Then he decided... That's why Tottenham couldn't get him in the summer.
I think it's proving to be true what a lot of ex-managers have said about... budgets and spending. Doesn't matter how big the club looks, how great the stadium and the training ground are, you need to spend to stay at the top of any division that you're in, and Tottenham just don't spend those high levels.
We should just add that they're third and they're top of their, I think they're top of their league in the Champions League.
Yeah.
So like it's a strange kind of, we're talking about the kind of atmosphere and narratives around football clubs and how important it is important. I don't think this is going to be sustainable really if they don't do something to,
well, Richarlison was 60 million
fans a bit more.
Richarlison was 60 million. I mean, Longley, I'd seen at Barcelona numerous times. I can't believe they signed Longley. He's not a good player.
But this is what I mean. You know, you can mention the figure that they spent for Richarlison, but the other players that they're bringing in, they're not bringing in of the either the quality or, you know, Perisic is a free, Longley's a loan. Spence is an up-and-coming player who the club were happy to spend 20 million on because they probably think they either get a long-term player or they get most of that money back because he's young and he's English. Conte immediately came out and said it was a signing for the club. We'll see if he's basically any good. Who else came in this summer? Yves Bissouma wasn't a huge amount of money, was he? So
25 million?
It's not huge.
Okay,
it's not, but
you put it all together. Look, yeah. The bottom line is...
Well, what are we talking? What are we talking there? We're not talking 100 million.
I think both things can be true. I think he said this morning in the papers that he thinks he needs three transfer windows. And that might be true for him to get...
It was two at the end of last season. Now it's three.
I'm pretty sure he said three. That might be true for them to really compete for the league.
No Kane there mid-table. I'm telling you.
In three transfer windows, he won't be there. So maybe he was like, for me to truly be happy, we need three transfer windows because I'll be with my feet up in Milan or something like that. Maybe that's what he meant when he said it.
But it's not sustainable to constantly complain.
Yeah, you've got to... Everything's about balance. You've got to find a way to keep yourself in a good position in the job.
It's like he's terrified that people are going to say, oh, you know, top of the Champions League group, third in the table, that's not bad. It's like that he would hate that so much because that implied mediocrity or settling for something that isn't the best. There's very little pragmatism there.
It's not sustainable to constantly complain goes fully against everything I've done in my career to this point, Alison. It's working out okay for me, so I'm going to keep it going anyway. Gregor Robertson, Tony Cascarino, Alison Rudd, thank you for being with me. Thank you all for listening as well. Loads of great stuff in the game this week, so make sure you check it out on the Times app. Go to thetimes.co.uk/the game. Loads for us to discuss on Thursday as well. We're building up to the World Cup. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have, I might as well break you the news now. We're going to have daily shows for you throughout the tournament as well. I'll be in Qatar. Tony will be in Qatar. I don't know what we've got planned, Tony. No parties, apparently. That's all we know. But yeah, we'll have loads for you in the coming weeks as well. So make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. Get those notifications on as well. You'll get each episode as soon as they're released. We'll see you soon.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.